But I'm good.
You did.
I won't go further on that one. At this time, I'd like to introduce our speaker this evening, Jen from Encinitas. Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome, welcome. Glad you're here.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here. Hi, I'm Jen, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm so excited to be here. I've been looking forward to this all week. This is such a great group. I haven't been here in over 20 years. A friend of mine spoke here about somewhere like 2004, I think, 2003. And we got to have the tour tonight. Thank you so much, Mike, for showing us around. This is such a special place. Like, I feel so moved being here tonight and learning all about the facility and everything that goes on here. And it's just, I mean, we're so blessed to be sober, like, no matter what, you know? Like, it's like, we don't get to do this, you know? But we do, and we get to do this through Alcoholics Anonymous, and we get to be here and thrive and survive and love and have fun and do all the things. And I love my sober life today, and I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, John, for asking me to do this. And Joyce, so good to see you. We've been on the Roundup Committee together, and I'm like, I know you. And Mary, thank you for the warm welcome. Everybody has been so delightful tonight. We got the warm welcome from Ernie when we got here, and it's just, we've met so many wonderful people in the last, like, 30 minutes. It's just so fun. And then the cake, I was like, I thought somebody was coming in the window here. I was like, what? And then I saw the cake. I'm like, that is so clever. Happy birthday, Simone. I loved hearing your story. And, you know, what a blessing. And I wanted to hear more about your story. It's just so great. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And welcome to our newcomer, I think it was Jim. And welcome to anybody else who's new or nearly new. And I hope you find here what I found and what thousands and thousands and thousands, millions of other people have found here. I have this way of life today that it's like beyond anything I could have imagined, anything that I could have planned for myself. I never, ever would have thought that I would get to do the things and be the things and feel the way that I feel right now. You know, like I was a miserable, miserable child, and my life was, I was really unhappy. I was really angry for a long, long time, long into sobriety even. It wasn't until I did my steps, and I'll get to that, but, you know, I don't have to live that way anymore. My sobriety date is November 3rd, 1991, and I was 17 years old when I got here. And, you know, I don't know why my disease got to be arrested early on. I don't know why, you know, sometimes I think maybe, like, my God knows that, like, I'm a wuss, and, like, I couldn't handle much more wreckage, and I just wouldn't have ever made it here. I don't know what it is, but I'm, by the grace of God, I got to be here, and I got to get here young, and you know, and it wasn't easy being young and sober, you know? It's like, you know, all of us that get sober young in the first, like, couple of years, we're like, what about, like, when I get married? What about when I go to college, and what about all this, you know? And it's like we're not doing, you know, it's like, just stay, just get sober, you'll see, it's all gonna be okay. And I got to do all those things sober, and I my home group is Thibodeau Park, Came to Believe group. It's on Tuesday nights up in Vista, and I'm really, really proud to call that my home group. And it's like you guys, like, we welcome people in. We're all, like, doing the deal, you know? We're all doing the steps. We're doing the service. We're doing the work that it takes to stay here. And I'm so proud to call that meeting my home group, as I'm sure all of you that have this meeting as your home group are proud to say. We had so much fun looking through the book. I'm like, we're seeing all of our friends. Like, oh, look who spoke here a couple, you know, 6 years ago, whatever. Our friend Pam spoke right before the pandemic. And then there's, like, this gap, you know? And then, like, this, you know, I'm like, oh. Oh, you know, it's like, how do we, but we did, we stayed sober through that, right? Like, I remember my last meeting before the shutdown. It was a Saturday night meeting, and it's still a regular meeting of mine today. And, you know, and I just sat there going, like, how am I going to not go to meetings? And I've been sober a long time. I still go to 3 to 5 meetings a week. How am I not going to have my fellowship around me? I was scared, you know? Like, it's like, you guys taught me how to show up and how to be present and how to be, not just show up to meetings, but how to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, how to be part of the fellowship. And there's a big difference. And I know, because I've done it both ways. I've done like just showing up to meetings, and I know where that gets me. And I know what I get and the richness of life that I have when I'm really part of the fellowship. You know, but it's like everything that we learn here about like acceptance and like God's in charge and like it's all going to be okay. Just, you know, turn it over and all of the things. It's like we were completely, I felt like I was trained to be able to handle walking through that whole pandemic thing. And like we just did the next indicated step and we got our meetings online and, you know, we fellowshiped the best that we could and we stayed connected and, you know, and it's like, and like we just had to accept that this is how it is right now and it's going to be okay. And we just rely on God and like it all works out, right? And so, you know, it was just such a like kind of a weird reminder when I saw that gap. There's like a line in the book, you know, like over a year. And so I'm really grateful. I was so happy when we got to go back to meetings. Like I was like, oh my God, so happy. Like so happy to be every meeting that I got to share at. And like it's just we're so lucky to have this fellowship. We're so lucky to have all of us together. And I can't do this without you. I can't do it without all of you. I grew up on the East Coast. I grew up in New York on Long Island. And I grew up with, in the 70s, 80s, like, I was a weird kid. I was a weird kid, and nobody else had divorced parents. My parents were divorced. My parents got divorced when I was 2, and then my mom and I went to go live with my grandparents, and nobody in my neighborhood lived, I mean, nobody was divorced, and certainly nobody lived with their grandparents. So I already, from the gate, felt weird. I mean, I was a weird kid from the very get-go, and I was angry, And I got kicked out of preschool or dance class when I was 3 years old for trying to choke another little girl. And so it was like I was just always like just doing weird stuff. And you know, I got sent home without my lollipop. And then I had the resentment, you know. And my mom was so mad. And it was just weird things. I did a lot of weird things like that. I was a weird kid. My mom would even tell you I was a weird kid if you asked her. And so, you know, I just never felt right in the world. And that's like so universal for us, right? Like we all, like most of us grow up feeling different or feeling not a part of. And I always wanted to be a part of so badly. And I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't manage it. I didn't know how to be, you know, with, like I just was a weird kid. I didn't know how to fit in. And, you know, there were a lot of things that were happening to me in my family. There was a lot of abuse. There were things that I was that like any normal person would be angry about, you know, but we alcoholics, we like take everything to the extreme, right? Like we just like, it's not only that like those things happen to me and like we, you know, most of us probably know about trauma and all of that and have suffered some sort of trauma in our lives. But there's something about like the alcoholic response to trauma that's a little different than non-alcoholics, right? And it's like, the way that I show up in the world as a result of all of these things that I think, you know, happened to me, it's different. Like I handle things in a different way. You know, my response is not productive, and you know, and I know other people who've had the things happen to them that happened to me, and they, you know, they weren't alcoholic. They didn't go out and drink at it. They didn't do all kinds of destructive things at it. And that's my answer. You know, my answer of my own accord is not, you know, to things and situations that happen in life are not always the most productive, the wisest, you know. And I learned here how to be a person and in the world and how to be a member of society, you know, and how to get along and how to fit where I need to fit, how to fit where God wants me to be today. And I didn't have any tools. I didn't have any tools for living. I was just so angry and I was really depressed. And by the time I was 11, I wanted to commit suicide. And, you know, I was just too afraid to do it, but I wanted to die. And I had my first drink around that time. And I'll tell you, like, the phenomenon of craving set in then, and I didn't know it at the time until I came here and heard you guys talk about it. And I only had, you know, it was like somebody stole a beer, you know, from somebody's parents, and we all, like, shared it. And so it wasn't like I got drunk, but there was something chemically that happened to me that made me think, like, I want more of that. And like I was thinking about it all day, and then I had another situation like that another time, and then I had my first real drunk when I was 12, and let me tell you, like I mean, that was it. That was like everything that it took away all the fears, and I felt like I could be the person that I wanted to be, you know, and like I was so afraid of people, and I was so afraid of what you'd think about me, and I was so afraid of rejection. And none of that mattered anymore. Once I got alcohol into my system, and I got the effect of alcohol, it was like that was it. You know, I wanted to feel that way as often as I could and have that relief from the life, and my mind, my crazy thinking. I had an anxiety disorder growing up too. I don't know which is, you know, how it all connects, my alcoholism and depression and all of that. But I started to have panic attacks when I was 9 years old. And that would, and I'd have bouts of it off and on all the way into, long into my sobriety, into about 7-8 years of sobriety. And so I struggled with that. And, you know, that like just kind of took over my life in a lot of ways from time to time in my life. And, you know, when I was drinking, I just, none of that mattered. Like, I wasn't afraid, you know, and I wanted to be a part of the world. And I didn't know that that's what it was. It's like, I'm like, I realized not that long ago in my sobriety that like I'm an extrovert with this like social anxiety, right? And like, so I'm like afraid, but I want to be in the middle. I don't want to, you know. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys taught me how to be in the middle and how to like get up here and do these things. And like, it's such a freedom, you know. I don't have to be controlled by that fear today. And so I drank. I got drunk. I, you know, was at a slumber party, and my friends. There was one other girl and me that we were the ones that kept sneaking back into the kitchen. You know, there was this bottle of scotch, big bottle of scotch in the cupboard, you know, and like we were the ones that were just like more. And, you know, it's like I just don't have that off switch. Once alcohol hits my system, more is better and better, and it doesn't matter. And I can't shut off until I throw up or pass out. And, you know, and so, you know, at 12, growing up in the suburbs on Long Island, it's not that easy to get alcohol, you know, so we do what we can. And, you know, we had, you know, 13, we had, we met this guy who lived behind the stores that we hung out at, and all my friends, we would all be out there smoking. And by then, now I'd found my people, right? Like, I'm cutting school, I'm smoking cigarettes, I'm hanging out with boys, I'm doing all the things, and I'm loving it, right? Like, I'm like, I have arrived, like Bill, when he, you know, at the country club, and you know, and I had all these friends and the boyfriend and whatever, you know, and we had this guy that lived behind the stores, and he would buy us alcohol. So we'd give him money, or like my friends would shoplift if he needed, you know, like cough syrup or whatever, and we'd go and we'd bring him whatever food, whatever he needed, and then he'd go get us alcohol, and you know, and so we did what we had to do, you know. And by the time I was 13, I was already doing things that I was ashamed of. You know, getting into fights with friends and whatever, and I was already at that age swearing off forever. You know, I'd have a bad night, I'm never gonna drink again. Like, it was already like that much of a problem. And like, I really thought that like, this is what everybody did, you know? And I really didn't learn it. It really hit home with me when I went to college and I had roommates who were normies, you know? And like, when I talk about like what I was doing, you know, in junior high and high school, like they were clearly doing other things, you know? They were doing homework after school. They were playing sports, you know? I didn't have any of that. Like, I tested really well. So when I was a kid, like I was one of those kids with potential. You know, and so I would take those standardized tests, and they, you know, did really well. And, you know, if only she would apply herself. I was one of those. And you know, and I just couldn't. Like, I always wanted to be this good kid on some level and, like, achieve. And like, I had this dream of going to Berkeley when I was young. And I don't know where that came from, but I just remember, like, thinking, like, oh, I want to be there with all the protests and the, you know, and all of that. And it just seemed like a really cool place. And so that was, like, my one dream. Like, I wanted to go to college. I knew I wanted to go to college. But I wasn't one of those kids that had, like, you know, some great sports capability or was musical or any of that. School was really the only thing that I had, and only when I applied myself, which I mostly didn't. And because I was busy, you know, I was busy hanging out with boys, getting drunk, getting high, getting, you know, doing all that stuff. And like, that was all I knew, you know, that was the only relief that I got. And like I said, I had this anxiety disorder too. So it was like my alcoholic brain and then all the other stuff going on in there. It was like drinking was the only relief that I had from my head. It was it. And when I wasn't drinking, I was restless, irritable, and discontented, just like the book says. And I so relate to that. It's like, I am not comfortable in my skin. I am not comfortable in the world. I don't know how to be in the world without something in my system. And so, you know, by the time, I was 13 years old, 14, 12. When I was 12, my grandfather died. So my grandma then raised me herself after that. My mom had left, so... my grandpa died. That was very traumatic for our family, and we were still living in New York. My grandma was raising me, and her mother also died a month before, but her dad was still alive. So he we all ended up moving to California, and my great-grandfather moved in with us, so it was me, my grandma, and my great-grandfather. And I'm a terror. Like, I'm 14 years old now. I'm, like, just this terrible, like, obnoxious, crazy teenage alcoholic. Crazy. And to the extent that after a year, my great-grandfather was like, I've had enough, and I'm moving to Florida. I'm going to go live with my sister in Miami. And, you know, and it's like, I didn't see that as me. You know, the book talks about how, you know, like what we've done to our families, our mothers, and, you know, and our closest family members. It's like, it's amazing that they still have us in their lives, you know, like the patience that they have with us, right? The book talks about that. And like, and I didn't know it was me until I got sober and started working the steps, and I started to see, like, what I had done, you know, and how I had affected my family, and how, you know, I thought it was all them. Well, you know, and the book also talks about how, like, years of living with an alcoholic, you know, it sometimes their responses, you know, we have a lot to do with why the family's so crazy. You know, and I couldn't see that. I couldn't see that when I was in my disease. I couldn't see. I was so selfish and self-centered, you know, and that is truly the root of all my problems, that selfish and self-centeredness. And I didn't know. I didn't know until somebody pointed it out to me when I was working on my fourth step. You know, my sponsor pointed that out to me, and I saw it in the book, and I was like, oh my God, like a light bulb, one of those light bulbs went off, and I got to see, and, you know, and like having that knowledge, you know, like knowing that, like it, and then having the tools of Alcoholics Anonymous to try to fix that, like that's where the magic is. That's where the recovery is. You know, it's like even having that awareness, like I can't work on it if I don't know it. And, you know, and I need people in the program who I trust, who know alcoholics, to tell me this, right? And to wake me up. And I'm so grateful for strong sponsorship. And so, you know, here I am 14, 15, I'm getting into trouble. I'm again, like, having things, I moved to California. Okay, it's like another planet. If anybody has lived on the East Coast, you know what I'm talking about. It's like another planet coming to California. And once again, I'm like uncomfortable, don't know how to fit in, don't know how to mix. I had really big Long Island hair and a thick Long Island accent, and all the girls seemed to look like Shelley, you know, with the beautiful long straight blonde hair, surfer girls, you know, and like I just, and I'm half Mexican, so of course that's another reason why I was different on Long Island, because there were no Mexicans there then, and then I come out here and it's like, well, I'm not really Mexican enough to be Mexican, but I'm not white enough to be, you know, whatever. I don't know what I am, and I don't know where I fit, and I'm not comfortable at all. And one more time, you know, I'm doing things where I'm getting, you know, I'm swearing off forever, and then I'm drinking again. And the thing about me is that, and the thing about us as alcoholics is that, like, I can stop, and I can't stay stopped. You know, I might be able to put it down for a little bit, but I can't stay stopped. And the only remedy for that I have found is Alcoholics Anonymous, and that has worked for me in miraculous ways, and ways that I never, and I've been able to be changed in ways that I never ever would have expected and never would have known. And I am so grateful for that. So, you know, so I get here and I'm getting into trouble, and then I find my people again. You know, it's like the kids, the divorced parents, everybody's drinking. We're all doing, you know, we're all cutting school. We're all doing the deal, doing the things that little teenage alcoholics do. And I finally drive my family so crazy that they put me in a rehab, and I did not want to go. I did not want to get sober. I knew I kind of, like, I what ended up happening is that, like, it's a lot easier to get pot, right? Like, back, you know, like, than alcohol at that age, right? So I'm, like, getting high every day and not going to school, and like, I thought, well, maybe that's my problem. Maybe I just need to stop that, you know, and, like, but not drinking. I don't need to quit drinking. I'm not quitting drinking. That's not my problem, you know. But I went, so I got sent to rehab, and, you know, by then it's like I'm starting to lose the things that are important to me. You know, my mom told me to go get emancipated. I was out all night drinking. I came home, and she happened to be staying with us at the time, and she said, you know, just go get emancipated. And, you know, it was like things like that are happening, and I still didn't see it when I went to rehab, and I was so angry. They sent me to San Luis Rey. I don't know if anybody up in Encinitas, there used to be this hospital, and Nick P was the counselor there, and I just gave him a cake for 49 years last night at my Friday night meeting, and what, like, an amazing, like, he's like a dad to me. He was the counselor at the time, And he was the first person who sat me down and got me to see that my drinking was not normal, you know, and that like everything that I was doing was not normal. And I had to do, we used to do those Hazelden packets. I don't know if that's still a thing, but Hazelden used to make these packets for all the steps. And so we'd do steps 1, 2, and 3 and write, you know, all these answers to all these questions. And, you know, and I got to look at that and see that my drinking, there was something wrong with my drinking and that I am an alcoholic. You know, and so I was in treatment for 28 days, and you know, they told us to do all the things, you know, do the steps, get a sponsor, stay away from the boys, go to meetings, you know, 90 meetings in 90 days. And you know, I'm 16 years old, and you know, I don't have much of a family, and I had no relationship with my dad at that time, and I felt like everybody else in my family really just didn't like me a whole lot, you know, and except for my grandma, who was she was my angel, and she took care of me no matter what. She was one of the people in my life that I knew loved me unconditionally. But I didn't have much of a family life, and my friends were my family. And that's, you know, so to say like, oh, you have to change all the people and places and everything, I couldn't do that. Like, I just was not willing to do that, and I just didn't get it, you know. Like, my head didn't clear for a long time, and like, I just couldn't hear, and I didn't believe, and I wasn't willing to do the things that you were asking me to do. And so after about, I think it was about 60 days, I got, or maybe 90 days, I got a resentment. I got a resentment at a meeting, and I think it had something to do with, like, I was late to the meeting, which I still kind of have a little bit of a problem with, but I was late to the meeting, and I was supposed to take a token, and they wouldn't let me take the token because I was late to the meeting, and then I'm mad, you know, like, I mean, how alcoholic is that? Like, I'm resentful, you know, oh, they, you know, fuck them, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, this is our crazy thinking, right? And so, but it's just an excuse. Like, we will, if we're going to drink, like, we will find any excuse to drink. Like, I will, if I'm going to drink, like, I take that drink long before I actually pick up the drink. Like, I'm already, like, you know, like, I'm already in that mode. I'm already in that mindset. And once I pick up the drink, by then, there's nothing that's going to stop me, you know? And so, like, it's like in recovery, it's just easier for me to, like, stay in the middle of AA. So I don't even, like, ever, like, get, even start down that path, right? So, but, I got a resentment, and I ended up hanging out with my ex-boyfriend, and he had a bottle of wine, and you know, and then I was off and running again, and you know, because, and I didn't, I just kept staying and hanging out with the same people, and you know, my friends at the time were on a court card, so we were all going to NA together, and it happened to be one of the meetings that they took us to in rehab, so my friends had gotten busted at school, and so they're on a court card, so we're all going, you know, it's like, these are my using friends, and they're like, oh yeah, it's great that you're sober, you know, you're clean, and you know, and of course, and as soon as I'm ready to be off and running again, they're right there with me, you know. And so, but I knew where to go. I knew when I was done, I knew what to do because I had that little bit of exposure. My first AA meeting was the Friday night young people's meeting at the Step House in Leucadia. And, you know, and Nick took us to that meeting every Friday night, and we all wanted to go because we got our cigarettes. Like, you can't do this nowadays. This is 1991. And, but we'd have he had a little bucket, and we all had our cigarettes with our names on it, our lighters, and you could smoke in the meetings then. You could smoke in the Step House. If anybody's been to the Step House, it's like this, it's a little house. It's like a little beach house. We'd all be smoking in there. And so we get our cigarettes, and, you know, and now they probably wouldn't let you do that because, you know, I don't know, 16, and yeah. And now you can't smoke inside anyways, but I mean, I don't know if they would let kids smoke anyways, but nowadays. But it was different that, we were talking about this last night, it was like different, like the therapeutic ways, things that Nick could say to us, like, you can't say to the kids today, you know, he'd be like, you're full of shit, you know, and that like got our attention, you know, like we heard him, you know, can't do that today, But you know, I'm really lucky that I got to have that introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew where to go when I was ready. When I got out of rehab, before I went back out, I went back to high school, but I went to a continuation high school. So I really wanted, you know, and all this time, like, I still always had that dream of going to Berkeley, right? All this time, like, I at this point, I'm like not in a position where, like, I'm not on that trajectory, you know. I'm in 11th grade, and I'm not, like, I'm moving into continuation high school. I'm not on the 4-year college track, right? And so that was one of the, for me, was one of the big things that I lost through my drinking. And And so I go to this continuation school, and they have a sober class at the time, right? And like, years later, I got to meet the person who started this class. It was really cool. And we had a sober teacher. He had 8 years of sobriety at the time, and he's still sober today. And so we would have meetings. He'd take us to meetings. We'd do journaling. We went 4 days a week. It was really an independent study program. But it was a safe environment, and there were I don't know, 10 of us that were sober that came out of rehab. And so I got to be a part of that. I got to be around sober people, but I just, like I said, I got that resentment, and then I was already ready to go. And sobriety was really, really uncomfortable for me. It was really, like, even going to meetings, like, it was like everything was really scary, and I was really raw, and I didn't do the things that you guys suggested right away. So I went out, and then I was losing everything that was important to me as a 17-year-old girl. And by the time I was ready to come back in, I saw how much, I had a moment of clarity, and that was when I got to see, for some reason, I realized how much I was hurting my family. You know, and like everything else that was important to me, friends, the school, the boyfriend, all the things, they were, all of the, it wasn't a lot. You know, I sat in meetings with people your age, you know, and like people talked about losing families and losing homes and jobs, and I didn't have any of those things to lose yet. And so I didn't, you know, at that age, you look for the differences, and it was really easy to see the differences at that age. But I got to see how much I was hurting my family, and I knew I didn't want to live that way anymore. I didn't want to do that anymore, and I didn't know what else to do. And I had tried church. I tried to be a good girl. I tried to be a good Catholic girl, and I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. I couldn't live up to it. And I tried, I tried school. I tried therapy. I tried all those things that it talks about in the Big Book. Going to the mental hospitals and everything, and none of it worked. So I went to my teacher, and I told him that, that it all came to a head in school, and everybody found out that I hadn't stayed sober over the summer when we came back for 12th grade. And so I got to see like how much I was hurting everybody, and I was still like, I don't want to be sober. Nobody's going to make me get sober. But I knew inside I didn't want to live this way anymore. And I knew on some level that if I didn't get sober, nothing was going to change. And I was so like unhappy, and I was so broken, and I had never been sane. When we talk about like being restored to sanity, I never ever in my life felt sane. So it was like I was just like broken from the gate, and you guys healed me. Like, I'm not broken anymore. Like, it all got put back together, it's such a miracle what happens here. So I went to my teacher, and I told him, I really do want to get sober again. And I don't really even know, it wasn't like I wanted to be sober. It wasn't like I wanted to not drink and not get high. I wanted my life to be different, and I knew there was no chance of that happening unless I got sober. And I didn't know what that meant at the time, in that moment, that it was like all these things, the steps, the fellowship, the meetings, everything. Like, I thought it was just go to meetings. I thought I used to sit in meetings and hear like, I'm sober, I go to meetings, and like my whole life is wonderful now. Everything's great. Everything fell back into place. And I thought people were just getting sober and everything's getting perfect. That's what my brain heard. And like, so I'm staying sober, and I'm like, I get a year of sobriety, and I graduate from high school, and I'm like the longer I'm sober, the more uncomfortable I'm getting. I had that 90-day pink cloud, and everything was great, and I got a job, and I finished school, and I did my life was getting better, and I started going to college, and of course that dream of Berkeley was by the wayside, and I'm at junior college, and I'm doing really well, and I had the boyfriend, and I'm going to some meetings, and then I'm going to less meetings, and I'm going to less meetings, and then it's just him, and he's not an AA, so it's just all about him and school. And like, if I just get A's, and I just get, I get through school, and then I get my master's, and I had this whole plan in my head, and I wanted to be in the music industry, because I really wanted to marry a rock star. That was my other dream, besides going to Berkeley. I don't know why. But so I was on this track of like doing this program where I was going to go to work. I was going to be able to work in the music industry. But in the back of my mind, I was like, I just need to stay sober long enough to get this degree and then get into the music industry. And then I can, then I don't need to stay sober because, you know, in my mind, like, it's just normal to be, like, drunk and loaded and whatever, you know, and so it'll all be okay. It'll be okay, you know. And so I'm thinking 4 years, you know, 4 years, I, you know, I'll just get my degree. Well, my God has a sense of humor and kept me in school for my bachelor's degree for 9 years. And so by the time I was actually done with my bachelor's degree, I was very well grounded and very solid in AA. And so, you know, it's like it takes what it takes. I'm sober, but I'm getting more and more uncomfortable. I'm getting more depressed. I'm getting more miserable. I'm not going to meetings. And things are looking really bleak. And I'm in therapy, and I'm telling my therapist, like, I don't understand. Like, I don't know why I'm sober. I'm still miserable. Nothing's better. I feel terrible. I'm depressed all the time. I want to kill myself. And she was like, can you honestly say you've actually worked the program? And I thought about it, and I really couldn't. Like, I didn't have a sponsor at the time. I wasn't really going. I was going sometimes to meetings. I had another him by then, you know, and I didn't really, you know. I didn't really know what it really was that you guys did here. And so how am I doing on time? Okay. I'm like, I know you guys said I could go till 9. I'm like, that's a long time. I don't want to like hold you guys hostage with my, but I really want to get sober because my sober life is so exciting, and that's like the really exciting part of my story, I think. In my opinion, I'm like, I don't know why, and like, I ended up checking myself into a mental hospital because I was so miserable. I was either going to drink or kill myself, and I didn't know what else to do. And I went into this mental hospital, and it was not far from here. It was Vista Hill, and like, I was 18 then, and so I'm on the adult unit, and like, and they didn't have meetings. They had like one CA meeting there a week, and so I went to that, and you know, and even still, after that experience, I still didn't really get it. That I needed to go, like, be in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it took me a while, and it took some more misery, but I had this one friend, Derek. Derek was on fire for AA. He was a year older than me, got sober young. He was, and I had a little bit more time than him, but he was on fire for AA. And we met in the step house, and we started hanging out and doing all the young people stuff, and he'd just take me everywhere, or he'd get me to drive. We'd go to all the young people's dances and the meetings and the you know, all these events, the roundup. San Diego Spring Roundup. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm gonna plug the Roundup. That was my first convention, and I have like, I love the Roundup. I've been on the committee for like 20 years, but that was my first convention. We were down at the Hyatt, and he dragged me down there, and I'm scared of everything. Like, I'm scared to go up in the elevator at the Hyatt, you know, to go to the top and see the restaurant and the view and whatever, and I'm scared of everything. But he just kept dragging me around, you know, and I just complained, and I was like Eeyore, and I was so miserable. And one day he said to me, "If I was as miserable as you, I'd either drink or kill myself. Like, why don't?" And you know, and it's like, and he has this way, Shelly knows Derek, he has this way about him that like can be abrasive, but for me it was exactly what I needed to hear, and it was exactly what I needed to wake me up. And that moment, like something shifted, and I went to Nick, my counselor, who was also Derek's sponsor, and I said, "Nick, I need a new sponsor, and I need somebody who's gonna kick my ass." And I don't know where those words came from. I don't know how I knew that. The words just came out, and that was one of my first, what I believe God working in my life and doing for me what I could not do for myself. I don't know why I said that. And he was like, "I have the perfect person for you." And he wrote down her phone number, and he gave me Carol's number, and he's like, "Call her." And I did. I was desperate. You know, I'm almost three years sober by this time, and I'm hitting an emotional bottom in sobriety, you know, and that's what it took for me to get here. To get in the folds of AA. I had to hit that emotional bottom where I know I don't want to drink, but I can't live like, I cannot take the way that I feel anymore, and I'm willing to do whatever you tell me to do. So I called her up, and like at this time, like I'm not calling people that I know, let alone some woman that I didn't know. And I didn't hang out with women when I, you know, in early sobriety. Like I hated women. I didn't want to hang out with women. I didn't want to go to women's meetings. I went to one, you know, and like the whole first 2 years. And she, I called her up, and she barked at me on the phone. She was scary, and I was like, she's like, "Meet me at this woman's meeting tonight." And I was like, "I'm not gonna say no to this woman." She just scared me right off the bat, and it was exactly what I needed. And God put this and it was again, like, I don't know why I was willing to make that phone call in that moment, but again, like, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I show up at that woman's meeting and I meet her and she introduced me to everyone. And it's like, I mean, it's a group. It's like, it's a fellowship. The women, they all knew each other. They're all laughing. They're all hanging out. We're, you know, and that was like the turning point in my sobriety. And I got brought into this whole different fellowship of AA. You know, there's pockets, you know, and like this group was like on fire. And I got to see people who were like really living life and really happy and like having like these normal lives. And that, you know, that's really the only other thing that I wanted. Like, I wanted this normal life. I had this really messed up childhood and I really wanted to have a great, you know, happy life. And I knew that there was no way to do that without sobriety, but I just didn't know how to get there. So she brought me into this fellowship that was like, they were doing the roundup, we were doing Southern California Convention. She had me on that committee. I was the young people's chair, and the next year by then, you know, she had all the parties. We used to do sit-ins. Like, it was like any night of the week, you'd stay up till midnight if somebody was ringing in a year of sobriety. Like, we'd all stay up, and we had the wall phone, you know, and you'd call to time, and then we'd do the countdown with the, I don't know if you guys remember this, but you know, we'd do the countdown to the time, you know, the time lady. And so, and we'd all be there, and it would be like, you know, Wednesday night, and you know, and then everybody would go home and get up in the morning, you know, and like she had a lot of the sit-ins, so she taught me about service, and I had to be there at her house and help her wash dishes and help set up for the party and be there and be present. I was still so afraid of people, but you know, she got me active. She got me doing things that got me out of myself, that got me out of my head. She had me calling three women every day. She got me into the steps, and it was like you're doing the steps. Like, we went through the steps. She took me through. We did the third step prayer on our knees. You know, and I was so uncomfortable with that because I didn't have a God of my understanding at that time. I had philosophized God out of my life. And you know, and it's like, I know I have a strong relationship with my higher power today, and I feel him working in my life, and I know, like, that's the only path to freedom for me, is to seek and do his will as the best that I can. But she, you know, she said she knew I had the same problems with God that she had when she got sober. And she said, just borrow my God. And I trusted her. I believed that she had a God that worked in her life. So I got on my knees and I prayed and I said, God, I don't know who you are or what you are, but I'm doing this because my sponsor told me to. And I started doing, you know, I started asking him every morning on my knees to keep me sober, and thanking him every night on my knees for keeping me sober that day. And then I started to add to that prayer and just start that dialogue with God. And you know, and I got to finish school, and I got to transfer to UCSD, and I applied to like a whole bunch of UCs, and Berkeley was the only one that I didn't get into, you know. And like, and so, you know, at that time it was like, because Alcoholics Anonymous had changed me and taught me, I had been transformed enough to have acceptance about that and to know that God had something better for me planned. Mm-hmm. And so I went to UCSD. It was an amazing experience. I got a degree in earth sciences, and I'm a geologist today. Like, that was never, like, I had no idea that this is where sobriety was going to lead me, you know? And I had, you know, had that whole plan that I had of like the, you know, when I was going to get my degrees, and then I was going to get married, and I was going to have kids, and I, you know, had this whole plan. And I told Carol this one night, and she was like, she just laughed. I didn't know why it was funny, you know. And now I know. It's like, oh yeah, like, yeah, it's all gonna I'm gonna plan all this stuff, and it's gonna go just the way, you know. No, God has his plan. And when I'm seeking and doing his will, and I'm doing my 10 and 11 every day, and I'm doing 12, and I'm being of service, and I'm just, you know, living life and in the context of the steps, like, everything falls into place, and like, I can be on a totally different trajectory than what I could have planned or thought it was going to be, and I'm at peace. You know, that's where I find peace, when I'm just like, okay, God, I'm yours to do with as you will. And so I got to go to college, and I have this career today. I'm an environmental geologist, and I've been doing that for about 20 years now. And I got to move to LA, and you know, and I got to get away from meetings for a little bit because I didn't like the meetings up there. You know, it was like, and then I got to get real miserable again. You know, like I do when I'm not going to meetings, and I ended up moving back to San Diego because, you know, that there's something really, and I'm sure you have it here, you know, in this area too. But North County AA, we feel like there's something very special there, and I've been back in my group for 20 years now, and I just I'm so blessed. You know, and the thing is that it's like, the message is that we stay sober no matter what.
That's
You know, it's like no matter what, Alcoholics Anonymous walks us through everything life could possibly throw at us, you know? And I got to get married in sobriety, and I had my son, and he has a sober mom. He's never seen me drink. I've been sober his whole life. And I started to be on this path of like, oh my gosh, like I'm getting all these things that I wanted, that I planned, that I, you know, stayed sober for. You know, we had a great life, and we got to do a lot of traveling, and you know, I've gotten to have this great career, and then my marriage ended a little over three years ago, and you know, and it's like that brought me to my knees, you know, that brought me to my knees in a way that most things haven't. My grandmother died when I was when my son had just been born. And that brought me to my knees. And Alcoholics Anonymous was there, you know. And these things that we walk through, like that, I thought those were the two things that I thought would kill me. And earlier in sobriety, I thought like I wouldn't stay sober through something like that. But you know, when it happened, it's like my foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous. No matter how painful it was, like I knew to just take the next indicated action. You know, my feet are trained to go to my home group every week. My feet are trained. To show up and to, you know, pick up the phone and call a newcomer. You know, when my head doesn't stop calling a newcomer, nothing solves my crazy head like picking up a phone and calling a newcomer or calling somebody that I know is going through stuff, you know. And so Alcoholics Anonymous has provided me this life beyond my wildest dreams. Like I got to. So my marriage ended, and I didn't know. Like, I was really scared. Like, I didn't know if I was going to be able to take care of myself. Like, I'm, like, 30 years sober, right? 30 years sober, and I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent. I don't know. My car broke down. I didn't have a car. One of the old-timers that I've been friends with forever was like, I have a car that you can borrow for as long as you need it, you know? And, like, 3 months later, I had a new job that I can fully support myself with. I was able to buy a car, you know, everything worked out, you know, and like I said, like this situation brought me to my knees and brought me back to God in a way that nothing else could, you know. When I was young in sobriety, I had another really bad bout, actually a couple bad bouts with anxiety, and it was another one of the most painful things that I could ever deal with. And you know, it's like, because I got to stay sober through that, I can look back on that now and I can see how that situation brought me closer to God in a way that nothing else could. You know, I had to go through that painful time and I had to walk through it and I had to trust that at some point there was going to be a light at the end of the tunnel and just keep moving forward and keep staying sober and keep showing up and doing all the things that my sponsor asked me to do. I've been blessed with really strong sponsorship, and I'm a big believer in that, you know, and being in the book and being in the 12 and 12 and in the steps, you know, and I'm so lucky because those are the things that have carried me through and have given me this beautiful life that I get to have today. So today I got to actually go back to graduate school. And like I'm getting my master's degree in geology, and I'm like so excited about that. And so I'm going to school at San Diego State, and I'm working on my thesis, and I'm working full time. And almost 2 years ago, right after I started graduate school, my son got sober. So we were going through a lot of stuff with him, and he went to treatment a couple of times, and he got sober at the age of 15. And it's been an unbelievable blessing. He had some relapses, and he's been sober since he was 15. And I can't tell you, like, the only thing that I know that I did right as a mom, that I can confidently say I did right as a mom, was be an example of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I kept going to meetings, even when sometimes I wanted to be home with him, you know. I still went to my home group. One of my old-timers said to me one night, he said, you know, one meeting a week is a whole lot different than no meetings a week. And what he was saying was, it's not, you know, I'm a three to five meeting a week person. I need a lot. That takes a lot with my head. But what he was saying was, don't get away from AA altogether. No matter what, just stay somehow in the program, you know. And I did that. And there were some weeks where I could only go to one meeting, but I always went to my home group. And you know, I was an example of that, and he saw me work with others, and he saw me do the whole deal. And he is an amazing member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not just saying that because I'm his mom, but he shows up, and he was going to high school, and he was going to a 7 a.m. meeting and then getting a ride to school every day of the week, and he was going to 2 meetings a day, and now I hear him on the phone. He's working with other people, and it's such a blessing, and I'm so grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous was here for him, you know, and my life today, like, I have friends, I have, like, this whole, you know, it talks about the fellowship that will grow up about us, and because I did the things that my sponsor asked me to do, I gotten to have this fellowship grow up about me, and I have all these women and all these people in my life that I just love dearly, and I know they're by my side no matter what, and I'm gonna end there. I'm so grateful to get to do this tonight. I'm so happy and grateful to get to be here with all of you, and thank you for my life, and thank you for letting me share.
Okay, I would like to thank Jan and once more time, and please come back again. Bring a group, bring a sponsor, you know. We love to have speakers. North County is very strong, very strong. We did you ever go to the women's sponsoring women of North County? Encinitas. It's they're the ones that helped us get started with ours many years ago. Yeah. Chit chat. Got a little special meeting going on here. All right. I'd like to thank the residents of the house and the women's auxiliary for a fantastic dinner.